So what would really make it cool is to take a situation or circumstance in your life right now that you'd like to see differently, that you'd like to see healed. And what we want to do is take this section and apply it to whatever the situation or circumstance in your life that you want to get a different way of looking at it.
Yeah.
You know, Patty, you got going up down, right? All right. So how is healing accomplished? Healing involves an understanding of what the illusion of sickness is for. Healing is impossible without this. The Course in Miracles talks about sickness as being non-right-mindedness. So sickness is really in the form of lack of peace. It's not just talking about a physical condition, which is sometimes what people think is that if they're physically healthy, they must really be, you know, sane. But you can be totally insane and have a pretty body, and you can be totally insane and have a nice car, nice house. You know, you could have all the worldly things, but still your mind be completely unhealed. And so most people tend to think that if those areas of their lives is really flowing, then it means they must evidently really be practicing the truth, and they must really know the truth. And that's not necessarily true if they still think they're separate, and they still think there's a such thing as guilt, sin, attack, anger, any of the things like that, or that they're just bodies and they've lost sight of their spiritual identity, then the Course would say that mind is still sick, still non-right-minded. And so it says that if there is a situation that we need healing in right now, that healing is impossible unless you understand why you're putting yourself through it in the first place. And so what the Course does is that it gets in touch with the true underlying spiritual reasons for the problem, as opposed to the superficial level that we tend to think that the problem is being caused by. It's almost like if you want to empty a bathtub, you could dip the water out of the bathtub teaspoon by teaspoon, or you could pull the plug and then let all the water go down the drain. And that's what the Course is really doing. That's why it's a teaching that can be very challenging for people, because it's always saying you're never upset for the reason you think, or that the problem is not the problem that you think it is. As a matter of fact, what I found is that whatever people think the problem is usually just a smoke screen to cover what the real problem is. And it's the thing that they tend to feel okay about saying the problem is. Like if a person says, you know, the reason why I'm unhappy right now is that I had a mother who wasn't very affectionate to me. That's just a superficial cause of a problem to keep them from going deeper to what the real issue is, which is their own personal thinking, in the way their own personal beliefs. So most people will pretty quickly tell you what they think the problem is, and usually that's not it. You can almost count on whatever they say the problem is. It's just the definition of the problem that feels the most comfortable, that feels the most reasonable. So when you hit the, so what we're going to do is we're going to hit some of the reasons for the problem that may not at all seem relevant. And it says that in the book that when you actually hear the answer, it may not sound relevant to you at all, because it's not the answer that it's not the problem that we've made up, and it's not the answer that we've made up either. And that's why it keeps recurring. The Course says that, you know, if you really solve the problem would never happen again. So if you're continually going through the same thing over and over again, even if it's with different people, you still haven't dealt with the real issue yet. So the superficial level isn't the level. So I'm saying that because when it gets into the deeper levels, and maybe some resistance may come up to hearing it, just try to keep that in mind, that the Course is communicating to us as if we are souls, as if we are spiritual beings, and that we're spiritual beings that create through our thought and our consciousness. And it's not talking to us as if we're human beings that's a victim of everything around us, and we're trying to figure out the best way we can solve things from making some type of an external change on the outside. That's not what it's talking about. It's actually talking to us as if we actually are unlimited spiritual beings. And it makes a lot more sense. So when it's communicating to us, it talks at two levels, and sometimes that's why it seems like it's sort of paradoxical or contradictory. It will communicate to us from the level of being children of God, of very creative beings, and then it also talks to us the level of we think we're separate ego human beings. And you can kind of tell which one it's talking to by what it says. So it says, first of all, then, if I want a healing in this situation that I'm in, and the Course ultimately calls the healing the undoing of fear and separation, that all problems are ultimately coming from our sense of being separate from our source. That's really the only problem. Then the Course says the healing involves an understanding, well, why am I putting myself through this? Until I understand what the purpose of it is, then I can't have a healing in the situation that I'm in. So the first section is called the perceived purpose of sickness. Now there's going to be a paragraph that I'm just going to read through
without really trying to explain it, because the few paragraphs after that really clarify. Okay, but the first paragraph says, healing is accomplished the instant the sufferer no longer sees any value in pain. So as soon as I don't see any value in the pain that I'm going through, I'll be healed. And then the Course says, well, who would choose suffering unless they thought it brought them something and something of value to them? So whatever you're going through right now, whatever area that it seems like you're having a problem in, it says you think it's a small price to pay for something of greater worth. In other words, I think that the suffering that I'm going through is a small price to pay for something even better that I'm going to get as a result of the suffering that I'm going through. This problem that I'm going through is really a small price to pay for something of greater value. It's almost like when people say, you know, no pain, no gain. It's like, okay, I'm struggling right now, but it's going to pay off. I'm going through all this hell right now, but it's going to pay off when I get the big rewards. And the Course is saying that that's exactly what we're doing with whatever suffering we're going through. It's exactly the same type of premise, which is, whether I realize it or not, I think what I'm going through in my relationship right now is a small price to pay for something of even greater reward. I think whatever I'm going through financially is a small price to pay for a greater reward. I think whatever I'm going through emotionally is a small price to pay. Whatever I'm going through spiritually, whatever this problem is, I think it's the price I have to pay to get something of greater value. And right now, I don't even have to know what the greater value is. But I need to, first of all, understand that I'm putting myself through this because I think it's for some good reason. I think it serves a purpose to suffer in this situation, whatever the situation is. And then it says sickness or the problem is an election. I love that. A decision is the choice of weakness in the mistaken conviction that weakness is strength. When you believe that weakness somehow or another benefits you, then real strength is seen as a threat. And health is seen as danger. So basically, and here's the part that just let me read through it and your mind go crazy and don't understand it, that's okay. It says, check this out. Sickness is a method conceived in madness for placing you on your Creator's throne. God is seen as outside, fierce and powerful, eager to keep all power for himself, and only by God's death can God be conquered by his Son. And what in this insane conviction does healing stand for? It symbolizes the defeat of God's Son, the triumph of his Father over him. Your healing represents the ultimate defiance in a direct form which the Son of God is forced to recognize. Your healing stands for all that you would hide from yourself to protect your life. If you are healed, you are responsible for your thoughts. And if you are responsible for your thoughts, you will be killed to prove to you how weak and pitiful you are. But if you choose to die yourself, your weakness is your strength. Now you've given yourself what God would give to you and thus entirely usurp the throne of your Creator. Now, everybody got that?
Yeah. Okay, now you see why I said, just let me read through it. You know what I'm saying? Like I say, I've been doing this 25 years. I'm pretty much hip to the past. They go, what the hell did I just breathe? What did I just hear? You know. Okay, and I can break it down to you pretty quickly. Once I've decided that, for instance, if I decide that I do have a problem, that I am sick, that I am weak, then that becomes my self-image. That becomes the way that I see myself. And I really build a world that's based on that perception of myself. And of course, this idea of God defying us would be us being made healed and happy and whole in spite of what we think of ourselves. That's an interesting definition of defying. I know you think you don't deserve love, but I know you deserve love whether you think you deserve love or not. I know you deserve more than you think you deserve, whether you think you deserve it or not. So if you think your life is crappy, and then the universe shows you that you really are beautiful and you are loved, then you've actually have been defied in terms of what you think about yourself. And so the Course says that, you know, so if I can prove it to myself, if I can do, in other words, all the crap that I go through is my attempt to be right about what I think my life is about. You know, if I feel like I don't deserve love, if I feel like I don't deserve to be treated right, or that I'm insecure, or that I'm fearful, or that I'm separate, the only way that can be right would be for me to get that justified through the circumstances and events that happen in my life to prove to me that I'm right about that. And you've seen your friends and relatives do it a lot. You may have done it. You try to point out to them what's good about them and what's wonderful about them, and they almost break their neck trying to point out how what you're saying to them is not true. Haven't you done it? You know, I had a conversation just like that the other day. It's like every time this person was very unhappy, and every single time I tried to say anything that would give them another perception other than that perception, they would go out of their, well, it's not really them, their ego would go out of the way to try to shoot that thought down. So that's the same thing. They want to be right more than they want to be happy. And they built up their whole reality around this sob story about themselves. And so every time you show them there's an alternative, then instead of them going, you know, I think I want to side with that idea, they want to show you that you're wrong and that what they're saying about their problem is right. And the only way you can be right about your problem is to have your problem happen. So every time you want to defend a position that's not bringing you joy, then you're asking the universe to give you that situation that's making you unhappy so that you can be right. Yeah. Isn't that, yeah, that's a trip when you hear it. But it makes, but that's exactly, so the next time you're ready to defend your position, try to remember that whatever you defend is what you're going to have to deal with yourself. That's why it's about not defending. You know, if someone's upset with me about something, and they totally project, you know how we do, we get close, we get scared, and then we build cases against each other because we're afraid of intimacy. You know how many people I talk to that say they're in a relationship that they want to be intimate, but the other person really doesn't want to be as intimate as they do, but they're totally addicted to being with this person. So what is that totally revealing to you right there in that moment? That they're just as afraid of intimacy as the person that they're with. Because if they were really with a person that they were really open, then they really have to be open too. So it's better to say you really want it, and then you can feel great about yourself. But you know when you're with a person that's never going to challenge you to be that intimate because they're not going to be themselves, and you can keep thinking you're this person that really wants to be closer than the other person does. You know, and so we play these kind of games, you know, these kind of, I love the course is Spiritual Psychotherapy. That's all it is. It's the greatest psychology book ever written. In the greatest spiritual book, blend it together. I mean, once you master this material, one of the things that blew my mind when I first read it was that it said there were no private thoughts. And I thought that was a really interesting statement because it seems like everyone's full of private thoughts. And so I thought that was kind of, and want to be, you know, it's like we want to have thoughts that no one else can really know what they are. And then it brought up that issue to me. Well, why do I want to? What is a private thought except some thought that I don't feel love? This is a loving thought. If it's a loving thought, why does it need to be hidden? So all private thoughts are illusions anyway. Anything I don't want to share with you couldn't possibly be real, because anything that's real is something that's shared. So all your private thoughts about me really mean nothing. So it doesn't matter with me whether you share them or not, because if it's a private thought, it's not really real anyway. So if you want to keep it to yourself, fine. One of the weirdest things that started happening to me after studying the course and working with it for so long was that most people in my personal life don't share their ego thoughts with me. It's really funny. It's like they don't want to share what they consider to be their most negative, fearful, angry, guilty, insecure thoughts. It's like they want to present the image that they're always, you know, loving and happy and caring. I don't know what it is. And I used to go, well, you know, if I really had a real relationship with them, they would really tell me all that crappy stuff too. They tell me all the ego stuff and all the, you know, and then one day it hit me. Wait a minute. You mean you're in a world where people only want to share their loving thoughts with you and don't want to share the other thoughts, and you're complaining about that? Then I realized that was an erroneous attitude for me to have. Especially when I told you, which is funny, because I would be the person that would be most likely to remind them of their innocence. Like, they know that. They know that I'm not the kind of a person to try to make them feel guilty or attack them. They know that from their experience. But their most guilty thoughts they don't want to share with me. And then they'll go share their most guilty thoughts with people who have no idea about innocence, which I think is interesting. So what do they really want? They really want their guilt reinforced. They don't want their innocence reinforced, because the Course says our separate identity needs guilt and fear in order to stay separate. So part of staying separate is not knowing your innocence and not knowing how loving you are. So if I want to stay separate, I've got to have fear, I've got to have guilt, I've got to have something that makes me want to not share and not communicate. So I realized that to our ego's greatest enemy is somebody who would love you, somebody who would nurture you, and somebody who would see you as being innocent. So people who feel guilty and fearful and afraid run away from people who are loving and gentle and support their innocence. And they're attracted to the people who reinforce their guilt and fear. That's why they'll have friends that can be very loving and kind, but their actual personal relationship will be with somebody that they stay in constant conflict with. Because the person that they're in conflict with is actually reinforcing their separate identity. Where the people who are loving them are the person who is actually making them have to expand beyond their concept of themselves.
Isn't that possible that that's where some of the conflict is coming from?
What, from what?
From that person trying to reinforce the positive, but getting the projection and everything back from that person.
Well, the person, the only reason why you, the way the other person is reacting to you is really your interpretation of their reaction. So no matter what they're saying to you, you have the power to interpret that reaction in a way that you still make yourself feel innocent. See, the biggest thing that helped me the most from working with this materials was lesson two, which is my favorite one. You need to find one idea in the course that you would just take that idea and you run with it no matter what. More so than trying to understand the whole thing and apply the whole thing is what I've learned. Like, the second idea in the workbook is I give everything I see all the meaning that it has for me. And once I really got that, then that's when everything changed. Because I realized that even if you told me I was a low-down dog, it's my interpretation of what you said that's going to affect the way that I feel. And if I don't believe that about myself, and if I was to see that as being just your interpretation, or I was to interpret that as being your call for love, your call for help, your call for your misperception, then I wouldn't have to have an emotional response that made me feel bad. What's making me feel bad is what I'm telling myself about what you're saying to me, and what's making me feel bad is the fact that I'm believing at some level what you're saying to me, or I wouldn't get so mad about it. So the truth is, the Course says when you revolt against something, you believe it. That's why you're revolting against it, is because you give that idea so much power. So if I really believe there was no such thing as hell, then if someone said they believed in hell, it just simply wouldn't bother me. Is it any more than if I said I'm Earl Purdy, and that person said, no, you're not, you're a giraffe. And I go, no, I'm not. See what I'm saying? It's like, why would I go, no, I'm not? You know, if I know I'm not a giraffe, I'd just probably look at you like maybe you're the one that's got a problem. But I certainly wouldn't be getting upset because I know that's not true. So a person can only affect me when I have doubt about it myself. If I didn't have any doubt about my value, then it would not matter what you said to me about my value because I know I'm valuable. And that's just your perception of my value. And what happens when you're that kind of person and people are used to using guilt and attack to manipulate, then when you don't respond to that, then they have to learn other ways of relating to you because that way is no longer going to give them the desired response that they want. And it almost like forces them to deal with you a different way. It's almost like the more you attack me, the less I'm going to respond. You attack me more, I'm going to respond even less. Taurus has had it built in. You know, they're very fixed people, and they basically like they like gentleness. Taurus, okay. Yeah, I'm from the south. I said Taurus.
Got it.
So all of y'all. I tell people all the time, if you understand a black dude from the south, you're using telepathy anyway. You know what I'm saying? You're already using telepathy. There's already mind-to-mind communication. Because I know the way I say words sometimes is very different from up here. But the point that I'm making is if anybody that knows a Taurus knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's like they're very fixed. And the more you confront them, the more they'll take their position. So you almost have to get to the point that you come from a non-confrontated place and a gentle place to reach them. And that's really the attitude that all of us need to take. That the more a person attacks you, the less you give them what they want. But we do it just the opposite. Let somebody's guilt trip us enough, and then we give in. You know, and I've had that happen where people have just gotten so upset with me because they made up something in their own mind that they wanted to feel separate about, and then I'm supposed to apologize as if what they made up is true, and they think that that's how you heal the situation. You make up something that's not true about me, and then if I'm doing then what I should do is I should turn around. And then I should tell you that I'm sorry. Like you say, well, I think you neglected me and don't really love me and don't really care about me. Well, in my perception, that's not true at all. So if I apologize for that and I feel in my heart I'm really giving up love, then I'm saying you're right about your wrong perception about me. And so they get mad. You know, and the truth is, no, I'm here for you. I'm willing to be loving. I don't share that same perception that you have, and I'm willing to be loving. And when you're willing to come back to me in a loving way, I'm willing to start right where we left off and proceed. But in the meantime, I'm going to still allow myself to be happy because I didn't do nothing. Does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do anything. So why should I be acting like I did something because you had a script for me that I didn't act out, and so therefore I'm a bad person? You know, think about it. Because the Course says that is what 99% of all anger is. It's nothing but an attempt to make somebody feel guilty. And also, you're getting upset with somebody for not acting out your script. And the Course even says that that's what betrayal is. That betrayal is nothing but someone not acting out your idea of what they should do based on the script that you've come up with for what your life was meant to be. So most people sit around, they make plans, then they assign roles to everybody that they know to help them get their plan accomplished without consulting them, by the way, and even asking them if they want to play the role, right? Right? And then when I don't want to play the role that you say I should without asking me, then you say I don't support you. So a lot of times when I hear people say that they really want to meet an enlightened being and that they really want to be in a relationship with a truly loving being, I often wonder if they know what the heck they're talking about. Because you're talking about you want to be in a relationship with someone who absolutely will not allow themselves to be manipulated, will not respond to guilt trips, and who will exercise their personal freedom and take responsibility for their experience and also expect you to do the same thing, which blows out about 90% of everybody we know. So really what happens when people who are not really ready to go for their power hooks up with somebody that's really more aware is they end up getting mad as hell all the time. They're not happier with that person. They're more miserable with that person. They would actually be happier with a person who was on the same level of manipulation that they are. Think about it. That's who I need. I don't need to hang out with Jesus. I have an inferiority complex out of this world. You know what I'm saying? You know, because I'm not able to do that much unconditional love. But I would be much better off with somebody who's pretty much on the same level that I'm on, and we're both working for it together. Right? So most people are asking for partners who have qualities that they don't have, which just creates more conflict. Not necessarily because that person is going to treat them cruel. It's because they won't be able to manipulate or control that person the way that they're used to being able to manipulate and control other people who feel just as angry and guilty as they do. So then you kind of realize that the world is perfect. It's perfect just the way it is. You know, I really believe that. I believe everybody's where they need to be. I didn't. I used to want to change everything and everybody, even as part of what I thought of was enlightenment. Now I understand perfectly, more than ever, that everybody's in the religion they need to be in, a non-religion. Everybody's in the teacher they need to be in. It's like I don't even expect the Course in Miracles to appeal to everybody. I don't even care if it does. I just want to communicate to the people that the universe, like you, draws into my life, and then my job is to be as authentically myself as I can be, because that's why you're here. It's for me to be me, whatever that means. Even if you don't like it, that's still what I'm here for, to be. And that creates an entirely different reality. So people don't believe it, but I'm actually in a reality every day that there's nobody in my life that's trying to control me in any way, and everybody I know is giving me all the freedom that I could possibly want, and no one's attacking me. That includes my relatives.
Wow.
That includes my relatives. I can pick up my relatives. I can pick up the phone and call any relative I got that I'm close to. And I can be just as much Earl as I'm being right here, right now. Now, there was a time, if you had told me that, I would have told you were totally insane, just like most people do. Well, you know, that works when you're in here. But when you go out in the real world, then you can, you know, whenever I hear people say that, I know that that's just an excuse not to apply the idea. They're just afraid. And so they need that as an excuse. And it is normal to be afraid at first, because it does look like you could be misperceived and be seen as insane. But you know why so much of the conflict comes from without? It's because a person talks too much. That's why. The only reason why they're conflicting with you is that you're telling them, you're not listening and being aware enough in your reality to just know when it's time to just silently apply the truth to yourself. And when you should be trying to communicate it to somebody else. And if you care about how they react, you don't need to talk to them. You don't need to share it. If you are attached to a person responding in a positive way to whatever you say to them, you really shouldn't say it. You're not really conscious until you're able to maintain your peace regardless of how they react, because you don't have any control over that. So when I set it up that when I share my truth, everybody on my job has to say right on, then you need to be quiet about your truth. You need to be at a level of consciousness that you don't care how they react to your truth if you say your truth. You shouldn't be on a level of consciousness where you need them to go, you know, I agree with that. That's a biggie. That's a big. In most cases, you will accomplish more by being quiet. I've seen more change happening to people in my life by knowing when to be quiet and when to speak than any other thing this book has ever taught me. Because you know which one of your relatives is going to tell you you're crazy when you say this stuff. And you know which one of your friends is going to go, you know, that's pretty interesting. I think we are. That's why they are friends. We know them. We're around them. We watch what they do all the time. So when you set yourself up by calling up your aunt that's the born-again Christian to tell them that you're in the metaphysical truth, and then you get mad because they say you're crazy, well, you are. Because if you had them insane, you wouldn't have even tried to talk to them about it. That was your attempt to make yourself doubt what you're doing. That was your own doubt being reflected back to you. Because when you first get into something, your old self, you really have doubts about it yourself. And so at the beginning, you draw a lot of opposition because the people in your life are reflecting your own doubts about what you're doing. That's why at the very beginning, it's so hard. So when you first start something new, like a new teaching, don't be surprised if it looks like a lot of people around you don't agree with you or different or think you're crazy or whatever, because they're just reflecting your old beliefs. You know, that's why I think that at the very beginning, it's so important to join with groups of people who already share your goal, more so than trying to get the people around you to support your new position, because they need you the way you used to be. That's why they're around you. They need you the way you used to be. They don't need the new you. They need the old you. And so either they're going to accept it, right, or they are going to go to someone who fulfills the need that you used to fulfill, or you may have some situations where you actually have to choose out of the relationship, and that's okay too. You may have to actually choose out and say, you know, I love you, you love me, that's great, but this doesn't work for me. And I always use my own personal experience. I had something like that happen pretty recently. A person was sharing with me something that they thought I needed to change about me, and I told them, well, you know, I totally respect your right to want that, and you need to have that need met however you can do it, but that doesn't work for me, and you're innocent. So please, you know, have that need met wherever you think you need to have that need met. But I'm not going to change my behavior. There's nothing wrong with my behavior. You know, am I attacking you? Am I beating you up? Am I trying to interfere with your life? No. Well, then you just don't like the way I behave. If you don't like my personality, that's not my problem. Now, if I was attacking you, that'd be one thing. If I was manipulating you, that'd be another thing. But if I'm being told that peaceful and you just don't, you and you want me to change and I'm totally peaceful, sorry. Nope, can't do it. Because you know what? If I change myself for you and I change myself for anybody, then I'm going to be surrounded by people who need me to be somebody other than myself. And then I'll never be able to be myself. So you go through that scary phase of being yourself, because you've never been that before, right? So now you're finally trying to be yourself, and it's kind of scary because, you know, you don't know who's going to hang, right? And so you may find a lot of people just moving out of your experience, and then you get kind of scared, and you don't know, like you're alone now. All of a sudden, you're not as around as many people as you used to be. And if you hold steady to your course, if you do not compromise, I guarantee you that you will start to attract people to you who are magnetized to the way you are right now. And those people will be easier to get along with and more loving than the people who just left. And some of the people who you were with will be able to accept the change and be there with you, and some of them won't. That's just a fact. You're never going to take everybody with you. If you think you're going to take everybody with you on the journey, you just well forget it right now. You won't take everybody with you. And you won't even have to put anybody out. That's the funny thing about it. I can't think of anybody that I put out of my life. All I said to that person was, it doesn't work for me to do that change. I still love you, and I'm still here for you. If you ever need me, I'm still here for you. But I'm not changing my, nope. Tried that, done that, been there. How much y'all been there, done that? I mean, how many times in your life have you done that? Have you tried to change your behavior to please somebody or get somebody to change their behavior to please you, which is totally disempowering? Because you're convincing yourself that your happiness depends on something outside of yourself, which takes away your power. And so we're getting close. And so as you begin to realize more and more what the Course is saying, you're going to go through some disorientation and you're going to go through some confusion. But time will keep gentle pace with you in your transition. And it won't take you as long to correct it as it took for you to mess it up. And that's the part that I watch people bail all the time. See, one good thing about doing it so long is that I've literally had the chance to talk to thousands of people. And what I've learned is people aren't different at all. We are different at all. All we do is the same things at different times. And because I'm not doing it at the same time you're doing it, I think you're different from me. You see what I'm saying? But it's the same thing. We're just not doing it at the same time. So we tell ourselves we're different. And the Course says there are basically just two types of minds. The mind that thinks it's separate and different, and the mind that thinks it's one and joined. And there's the only kind of people there are in the world. And then those two thought systems are acted out in a variety of ways in our own personality and our own flavor. So if I'm talking to somebody 15 minutes, if I have dinner with somebody, if I hang out with somebody in the evening, I know pretty much whether or not that person is going to make themselves mad with me or they're going to really enjoy being my friend. If they have the worldly thought, then I know we're going to have problems because they won't understand me. They'll think I'm cruel. They really do. They'll think I'm cruel. First thing people are going to tell you when you're claiming your power, and don't fall for it. First thing they're going to tell you is that you're selfish. That's going to be the first thing you're going to hear. You're selfish because you won't allow them to manipulate you. Because if they weren't selfish, then they wouldn't be the man and let you do something you didn't want to do. You know, if I'm not being... It's selfish for me to demand that you do something that you don't want to do. But I call you selfish because you won't do what I want you to do. So a lot of times, people in relationships or friendships or even couples or whatever, you know, some people, you know, they just don't like me sometimes. You know, because if a person's in a relationship or friendship, I'm not just talking about love relationships, I'm just talking about any relationship. If you're in a relationship where you're being dominated or controlled, and you come to my classes, then you're not going to want to be dominated and controlled. So a lot of times their partners or their friends or their relatives or their mama, they'll come just to see what the hell this guy is talking about because they're losing the control that they've had over this person and they don't understand why. They're not able to manipulate them the way they used to. And they won't actually get mad at me, you know, because that's how they've learned to make themselves feel secure. When you're a fearful person, you only feel secure when you can control and limit those around you and try to control. I mean, that's what makes you feel safe, that you think you got them all under your control. So as long as you need somebody else, they'll never know you. Because as long as you need them, you'll be too afraid to be yourself because you're afraid of the loss of that support. So they'll never know who you are. And then they'll be the first one that's shocked when you do gain your power and you're out of there. And then they'll be like, wow, what happened? You know, they don't, well, the truth is, you were trying to dominate me and I was also allowing myself, we're both equal, I'm allowing myself to be manipulated. But you're trying to get your sense of power from how much you control me anyway. And I'm trying to get my sense of security by how much you take care of me. So we're both playing the same game. But as we wake up, then we start to see the games. And then that's why the Course keeps saying you have to learn how to forgive. Because if you don't learn how to forgive, as you wake up, you'll just have more grievances against everybody around you. Instead of feeling better about everybody, you'll be saying, Lord, I'm so-and-so. You know, look at how they're manipulating. You just see it. You see all the game playing. And you see all the manipulation. And you go, because you used to do it. And all of a sudden, you go, wow. So your ego will want you to use that for a grievance. But your conscious self will go, well, I'm just only seeing my past. This is just an opportunity for me to forgive myself because I've done the exact same thing in probably some areas of my life. I'm still doing the exact same thing. So that's how you save yourself. You don't make yourself different from the people around you if you don't want to clash with them all the time. You see where you're the same instead of where you're different. So a lot of times, so when that stuff comes through, I have to let it go through. Now, what were you wanting to ask?
I understand the concept of knowing when not to say something, but isn't that in contradiction to what you said earlier about what you keep to yourself isn't real?
It depends on what you're keeping to yourself. It depends on... Another thing to keep in mind is that the actual form of your behavior is not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is your purpose.
what we're talking about is the only thing that's important is why. In other words, a lot of people think being honest is something like me really telling you I don't like the color pants you got on. So if I don't really tell you how I feel about your pants, I'm really not being honest. You know, that's not the level that the course is talking about honesty. It's talking about consistency. It's talking about me constantly only wanting peace for you and wanting love for you and sharing what's peaceful and it's not loving. It's not my personal opinion of the cake that you baked or the car that you drive or any of that ego stuff. It doesn't really matter about the ego stuff. It doesn't matter whether you tell me you like my shirt or not. It doesn't really matter whether you tell me the stuff at the level of the body. It's what really matters is that we share the loving truth about each other as much as possible. So what you're going to do, what you're going to learn to do from moment to moment, is you're going to learn how to get in touch with your inner guide, and then your inner guide will instruct you from moment to moment about what to do, because there's no cut and dry rule for behavior at this level. What we really want to do at this level is learn how, because the Holy Spirit is real. The voice for God is really real. It can sound like an abstract concept that people are trying to make real, but when that voice really started to communicate with me, because I had worked on myself enough to let go of the blocks and learn how, it freaked me out. I mean, really, because it really is a voice, and it really does communicate to you, and it really will say, go do this, go do that, don't go there, do go there, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so after a while, you'll get to the point that you're not figuring out anything anymore. All you're doing is following instruction, which is a much easier way to live. See, I used to be a big analyzer and really was trying to break it all down and figure it all out, which is a normal thing that usually happens when you first get in the course. I watch people drive themselves crazy with the course at the very beginning because they really try to figure it all out, right? And what happens when you start to hear your inner guide is that becomes the most important thing to you. The most important thing becomes keeping anything that would keep you from hearing that voice out of your mind. Because it'll tell you. I mean, it'll literally say, are you okay? I'm going to give you another way of looking at that. You know, it's like, that's not the best choice. You can do it. You can always tell the voice, because the voice is never going to make you feel guilty. It's never going to punish. It's never going to condemn. If you listen to any voice that's punishing you, condemning you, or trying to make you feel guilty, that's how you can know from the very beginning that you're not listening to your higher self. If it's a voice telling you that if you do that, you are guilty, that's not the voice for God. That's your ego. What your higher voice might say to you is, this is a mistake. This is an error. You're innocent. And all thoughts have power, and every action has a consequence. But you're innocent. You know, there is a consequence to this action, but it still doesn't change your basic innocence. And that's the voice you're looking for. So it's really not that hard. People say, well, how can I tell the difference between the voice of my ego and the voice of the Holy Spirit? Well, it's easy. The voice of your ego is always going to make you feel guilty, afraid, or it's going to make you want to attack or make you feel attacked, or it's going to make you feel defensive, and it's going to make you feel vulnerable. It's going to make you feel alone, or like somehow you got to control something outside of you. If you're listening to your inner voice, you're going to feel more peace, more centered. You're going to feel loved. You're going to feel energized instead of depressed. And even if you do feel some disorientation from it, you'll realize, hey, that's just my ego reacting to it. And you'll be aware of another part of you that's actually glad to hear that. And you'll be aware that your ego voice, his mind is going, ooh, I'm upset about that. I didn't want to hear that. You know what I'm saying? You'll get to the point, you'll really see your two minds. It's like when you're a kid, as you have those cartoons where it's the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other. That, to me, that's like the clearest example of the course. Because that's exactly what it does. It says, you know, you got two voices in you. One you made up, and one was given you by your creator. Since you made up the voice of your ego, you value it more, because we value the things we create more than the things that are given to us. So a voice that's given to me isn't as valuable to me as a voice that I made up. And that's why we like to listen to ourselves with a little S quicker than anything else. Because I made up my philosophy. I made up my belief. I made up my approach. And I built my whole life around Earl Purdy's beliefs. So to give up his beliefs is the same as saying give up Earl. So we react, he says, we react to the destruction of our thought system as if it's the fear of death. It's literally like we're going to die if we do it differently. Because it's true, we do. Your old identity, your old self literally does die. And it fights for its life. It doesn't want to die. It doesn't want to go. And so when you really try to make a radical shift in yourself,
don't be surprised if there's a part of you that tries to sabotage the whole process, because there's a part of you that doesn't want to change. Just build, I might be miserable, but I know my way around it. You know what I'm saying? If I have a certain image of female, like one of the most interesting things, in not, like I said in the class, of not being in a special relationship with anybody per se here, is trying to take these, is taking these new ideas and principles and taking it into my social life and taking it into my relationships and not wanting to repeat the same patterns of the past and really doing it differently. And what you see is that most people are, they all have the same script. They're just different people with the exact same script. And so it's such a trip. It's like, I don't care how interested they may see. After a while, you say, my God, it's the exact same script. This person is basically looking for somebody to either take care of them, build their self-esteem, make them feel special, and make them feel important. And then they see their purpose is doing the same thing for you, provided that you give them the special attention. They'll give you the special attention, and they won't give you the special attention any longer than you give them. You know, you act out whatever that role is. And the ones you do, you're supposed to exclude everybody else that you know, primarily, other than them. And then that's what you're supposed to do. And that's not my ideal relationship anymore. So it's really interesting to be out in the so-called dating world and realize that I'm the last person that can choose the person that I would be in a relationship with. Because the kind of person that I need to be in a relationship with is not the average person. So only my higher self knows who that is. So my job is just to be totally present, be totally loving, not try to get, not try to seduce, and not try to manipulate, and see who recognizes me and who's attracted to me for who I am. You know, and so it's totally different. So you don't get a lot of support from the average person when you try to take these approaches. Try it sometimes and see how much support you get from the average person. The way that I talk is so threatening to the average person. What the Course teaches about special relationships is the main reason why people throw the book away. Who knows what I'm talking about? Anybody? The Course teaches that love is freedom, and that is the last thing people believe that love is on this plane.
God on a Harley explains it really well.
What's in that?
God on a Harley.
A God on a Harley?
It's a book.
Oh, it does. Okay.
And it explains it extremely well.
Yeah, yeah. It's very interesting the way we do relationships, but it's just like a fish in water. As long as you're in the water, you don't see it. But the minute you get above it, out of the water, you look back at it and you go, my goodness, how in the world did I ever think that was love? How did I ever think what the world calls love is love? I'm just amazed at myself when I even think about it now. It is so conditional. It is so guilt-ridden. It's so rooted in sacrifice. It's so rooted in separation and control that it's amazing that I ever thought it was love. You know, I mean, you can have these incredible relationships with people that you think is like the greatest thing that you have, and you do one thing wrong. Wrong means whatever it is they think is wrong, right? And then that love is withdrawn. It's like all the love they had for you is like gone. And then you have to ask yourself, just like the Course says, what can change was never real. How real could it be if it could be something you could withdraw that fast? It wasn't. But see, it's hard for us to admit that to ourselves, that if it can change, it never was love. So my ego goes, well, I know she loved me. I know I loved him. La, la, la. Did it change? Are you in communication? Do you love that person so much that you're glad that they're happy, even if it's not with you? Is your love still for that person, even though they're not with you? Or even if they're doing something different, by love I mean your willingness to free them to be happy and to fulfill themselves and to express themselves without you trying to attack them or you trying to judge them or you trying to interfere with it. If you're not interfering with it, you're being loving. Even if your ego don't like it, you know, your ego may not like me, but if you don't pick up a gun and shoot me and you don't try to interfere with me, you're loving me as far as I'm concerned. You know, I don't care. Your ego can just be totally freaked out about me. But if you're not messing with me, then great, because usually the people who mess with me are the ones who think they love me. Actually, the people who have been most dissatisfied with me have been the ones who told me they love me. I don't know if that's been true for y'all, but it has. The people who most wanted me to change were always the ones who told me they cared about me the most. It's almost like I wish people to treat me as good as strangers do. Because a stranger sometimes, at least they're not going to interfere. They're not going to judge me. They're not going to try to stop me from going out bowling with my friends tomorrow night. That's the person who loves me. You know? So you need me here to sit next to you while you watch TV.
And not talk to me, by the way. Not you, a doggone thing. You just want my...
The course says we just... Our idea of a relationship is two bodies being together under the same roof.
And that's what most people celebrate in their anniversaries. We have had 50 years of being in the same house. Let's have a dinner.
You know what I'm saying? Or like you guys said in the that movie about the spotless mind, you know, about going out and watching the dining dead. And you watch, go to a restaurant and watch the dining dead. They will go, you watch them. They get their food and they'll sit in front of each other and they won't say one word to each other the whole time they're sitting up, except pass the salt. But it's for you. You don't see no dialogue. You don't see no passion. You don't see any excitement. The dining dead. Look, just next time you go to a restaurant, check out and see who's communicating and who's just sitting there. You know, but they'll celebrate the fact that they've sat there without talking to each other for 15 years. And they'll be proud of that. You know, because that's the difference between going for security and going for love, which is the ultimate security. But we don't know it on this plane, you know. Because on this plane, it looks like unless you're special to someone, they don't care. People don't care about you unless you're special to them. So that's why everybody's after the specialness so much. It's because it looks like people don't care. Unless I'm special to you, you won't care what I eat. If I'm special to you, you'll help me if I have a problem. If I'm not special to you, then you just pass me by. That's what the ego is going to say, right? The truth is, it's just the opposite. If you will discover the love within yourself, if you'll get in touch with what the Course is trying to get us to do, get in touch with who we really are, who you really are will always attract to you what you need whenever you need it. As a matter of fact, the biggest, most helpful things that's ever happened to me, it didn't come through the people I expected it to come through. My biggest support has always come through the people who I least expected it to. That's a fact. I mean, a lot of times, look at your life and ask yourself, did your biggest breaks and benefits actually come through somebody you thought you knew and was close to, or did it seem to happen to what looked like a chance encounter or circumstance? And every time you go, that 90%, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, when I moved to Denver and I came here, you know, I came here because my guidance told me to come here, and I've learned to trust it. I didn't know where I was going to teach. I didn't know where I was going to live. I didn't have a car. I was just, you know, I was trusting. Within a month, all those things were handled in a way that blew me away through people who were literally strangers to me. It was amazing. It wasn't my relatives that said, hey, Earl, I'm going to shoot you a couple of grand to help you out. It wasn't my friends. It was people who I didn't even know. And when you look, and so if you are loving, if you let yourself be loving, then you'll find that what you need will always be drawn to you. So you don't have to be in bondage to somebody else to make sure that you're taken care of. If God is really your source, if you really believe in God, your source, you'll be taken care of. So the Course made me aware that I was an atheist. That's what the first thing that got me in touch with. I really didn't believe in a higher power. I was just using lip service. I really didn't. I can say that in total honesty. Now, I thought I did, but the truth is, I didn't. Because this book would always talk to me like, you know, go to the Creator and ask the Creator what to do, where to go, and what to say. It would always act like the Creator was really real, and that kind of bugged me because I was used to making up my own plans and then saying it was God's guidance. That was the way I did it. I read a book and I said, you know, I really feel like God is telling me to quit my job. You know, and then you can quit your job and be struggling your butt off and don't know how you're going to be fed. You're going to say, oh, yeah, God really told you. So then your mind goes, well, that's just because it's trying to build up some qualities and strength in me that I knew I needed to build at that time. Because you're going to rationalize it, you know what I'm saying? Because it's hard for us to get that. If you're following guidance, you don't struggle. If you're following guidance, your experience just expands in joy. See, so the Course says we make up our image of God. And then we try to do what the God we made up tells us to do. And what you can tell, he says, is by if you end up in fear, you were not listening to your higher self. And that's how the result will take you back to the cause. If I end up miserable, I wasn't listening to God. So what my ego would do is say, well, you know, misery builds character, struggle builds character, and if you struggle, then that's what's going to make you a better person. It's all those knocks that I've gone through that's made me the person I am today. And the book says, you know what? That's exactly the way you should look at it.
and you're going to do it. And I went, woo, you smart. Okay, you went through all that stuff. Claim it was good. You're right. You did learn some good lessons. But don't tell yourself it was necessary for you to go through that hell in order for you to come to this place in your consciousness. It wasn't. But if you chose to, then don't condemn it and say, everything I learned was for my own best interest. I went through that hellacious thing, but that was really for my own. That really is the right way to look at it. Because if you do that, the Course says, what you will do is you will, then your past will not be, how do you put it? Then your past would not be in opposition or fighting your present. Like a lot of people think that they can't enjoy their now because they're too busy trying to overcome what happened to them in the past. So if you claim that your past was helpful, then now your past is no longer a problem. See, if I see my past as being to my detriment, then I got to spend all my time in therapy trying to sort through all my past stuff. But if I claimed it was all good, even though it wasn't all pleasant, which is different, right? Then it's no longer something for me to fight against. Besides, it's gone anyway. It's nothing I can change anyway. Doesn't this make sense to everybody? Yeah. So what I'm trying to do when I come into a class is to not at all keep a person from coming. You know, this is just one way of looking at it. And there's always other ways to look at it other than what I share. But I don't feel like I'm here. We would be here unless whatever was supposed to come to me, we all were supposed to hear. You know.
What's so, interesting to me is that script was written for me.
What script?
In my youth and childhood. Mm-hmm. That I had to suffer to gain. That I had to work hard to achieve. Mm-hmm. Nothing was given for free. But I've taken that script and rewritten it to make it work for me, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's something that that's the way I was brought up. I had to work hard. I had to suffer to get
recovering
goal.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm recovering Southern Baptist. You know what I'm saying? And I was looking at Oprah yesterday, and Lisa Marie Presley was on there. And Oprah was like asking her about, you know, I've always wanted to talk to somebody. She said, I grew up poor, and then I came into the prosperity and wealth basically that I have right now. But I've always wondered what it's like when you come into the experience and you know that that's taken care of. You literally don't have to work a day in your life. So what happens is that, and she was telling, then Lisa shared what the challenges were of that. You know, because it's lessons in all of it, right? Even though people say they'd much rather have her lesson than theirs. You know, the average person will always say, yeah, I think I'd rather have $100 million lesson, though, if I had a choice. Because this system is set up to make us believe that if you have money, you have everything you need. I mean, that's okay. I mean, that's the way the ego would set it up, you know. But I thought the thing that was interesting, though, about that was that what that showed me was that's a lie if it says that, you know, you got to struggle in order to have. Because if you have one exception, then it blows the whole theory. And that's what the Course talks about, the no exception rule. And I love that. I always use that, the no exception rule. You know, if one person didn't have to work in order to be taken care of, then nobody has to work in order to be taken care of. That blew the whole theory. Now, Lisa's got to breathe, you know, at this level. You know what I'm saying? At another level, even that's not necessary, but I'm talking about at this level, okay? At this level right here, notice that Lisa might be rich, but I bet you she peed in the last 24 hours. You know what I'm saying? There are some universal experiences that we all have, regardless of our race. Sex. So the Course is saying that's what we need to get in touch with. What if, you know, all of us want love. All of us have fear. All of us create our experience. You know, that's what we all have in common, that everybody in here is pursuing their idea of happiness in their own way. And where we clash is on the ways we choose to do it. But everybody wants the same thing. Everybody in here wants to have a peaceful experience. But we've all decided on the way we're going to have it individually. And then we clash with each other, right, on how we've decided to do that. And that's where the conflict comes from. So I'd rather focus on how we all want to have peace than try to focus on all the different ways that we decided to have it and then fight about it. You know what I'm saying? Like I was watching the news. I love all the lessons we get from the news and stuff. Like all those people who were trying so hard to make sure that this lady wasn't taken off the feeding tube, you know. And I have a friend of mine that's a brain surgeon, and he deals with people like that all the time. And he had sent me an email, and he was explaining in detail just from a purely medical perspective that in all the years that he's practiced, you know, even though he's in the truth thing, and all the years he practiced, there's never been anybody with the level
of injury that she has that just spontaneously comes back out of that. That doesn't happen. It's, all things are possible, but I'm just saying most of the time it doesn't happen. But he said even more than that was that she was totally unaware of anything that was going around her, whether she was being fed or wasn't being fed. There was no level that she was feeling pain, per se, you know. And then you can jump that up another level, which is really the highest level, is the court says no one dies unless they choose to. So that's deep. No one dies unless they choose to. So they really don't have any control over that anyway, one way or the other. If she really wanted to live, then probably she would have had a miraculous recovery. They would have not taken, you know what I'm saying? It's like it's really what her soul wants, not what each individual wants. So to me, when I watch things like that, I just think they're just great ways to make us forget where the power is really located. It just further makes us believe that somehow or another through manipulating the outer, we're going to get a result. And so the Course teaches that what happens on the physical is just a way to bring about whatever the goal is that you've already decided anyway. So if I have a headache and I've decided not to have the headache, when I take the Buffarin, my headache will go away. If I've decided not to get rid of the headache, guess what? I'll take the Buffarin and what will I say? I still got the headache. And we've all seen that all the time. So the Course teaches that the whole world is just totally neutral. And it's all neutral, and then we decide what it's going to be for us. That's why it doesn't work for everybody. It's because one person decided to be cured, the other decided to move on. One person decided they need a lesson that would make them be crippled for their lifetime, and another person decided that, wow, they're going to have a miraculous healing, and all of a sudden they come out there coma and walk. And none of that has anything to do with the outer. It's what you begin to realize as you get conscious, and then the Course says that what you do in the outer is just a symbolic gesture that reflects whether or not you're willing to be healed. It's what you do symbolically to show that you're willing to have the healing. Like, if I choose not to attack you and I choose to support your peace, then I'm really not in control of your peace. But my desire for you to have peace is really me affirming that for myself. It's really me asking for it for myself. That's what once I got that one, that was a big breakthrough. Because I could want you to have peace and you still decide to be in conflict for the rest of your life. But the mere fact that I'm choosing for your peace is me choosing for my peace. See the difference? So to me, that's the beauty of being in a relationship. Because imagine how much time you could save if you were in relationship with people and their purpose in your life was to be a safe shelter for you to grow in, for you to be yourself. That's what they're there for. So when you're doubting yourself, they're the ones that remind you that you're powerful and that you're innocent and you deserve support. Because we're so codependent in a way, and we give other people's perceptions so much power, why not use it to our advantage instead of fighting it? Rather than fight it, why don't I just work with that? Okay, since I do give people's opinions so much power, well, why don't I just make sure I'm around people who are going to give me the opinions that I need to hear? See, I'm working, even as I'm working on letting go of that dependency, okay? I'm every day working on letting go of it, right? But even while I'm letting go of it, I'm going to surround myself with people who will remind me of my power. So I'm working both ends against the middle. That's the way to go, you know. So we're in that position now. We have really been freed. We can't pretend we don't know. We know. So the issue, I want to ask you in completing today, you know, how many of you really want to claim your power? And are you willing to claim your power enough to stop trying to make other people feel guilty? Because that's how you know you're trying to claim your power. When you're willing to let go of the guilt and the attack and the judgment on others, and to support them in being who they are, even if it's not necessarily the way you would want to do it, as long as it's not something that's violent or attacking, then you know you're ready to be free. That's how I know. That's how I know I'm ready, because there's nobody in my personal experience that I'm trying to control. And guess what? There's nobody in my personal experience that's trying to control me. It was the most amazing thing. When Earl actually did it, it happened. But I used to wouldn't. I wasn't going to be loving until other people were loving. I wasn't going to give up the freedom until you gave me the freedom. I wasn't going to trust you until you showed me you were trustworthy. You see what I'm saying? But when the Course got me to reverse it and go, Earl, you be trustworthy. you come into a situation and bring peace. You come into the situation. You know, none of y'all have to worry about me being behind the building getting ready to mug you at night. You know, it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So I'm doing my part as your Savior. You're doing your part as mine. You're not interfering with me, and you wish me well. We are being saviors to each other. It's that simple. But the ego wants to make it much more complicated than that. And if it's something for you to do, you would be told. And if you don't want to help a person, don't feel guilty about that, because they will attract the person to them they're supposed to. And so we take all that personal responsibility, like, you know, if I don't do it, then nobody's going to do it, you know. But I don't really want to do it, you know. So, you know, we believe in sacrifice so much, some of us are going to go ahead and do it anyway. That's just the way we are. But as much as you can, try to do what you really want to do with people, and help the people you really want to help, and try to cut down on the sacrifice as much as you can. It's like waiting, but sometimes the desire to sacrifice and the need to sacrifice is so great that you feel more guilty if you didn't do it. Then go ahead and do it. You know what I'm saying? If not visiting your mama would make you feel really, really guilty, even though you don't want to visit your mama, you dread visiting your mama, but you feel like, God, I gotta go see my mama. But you know you feel worse if you didn't go see your mama. Go see your mama. You know, but at the same time, keep working on your mind till you get to the point that you would feel guilty whether you went or not. But, you know how you feel. If you're going to feel worse not going, go ahead and go. While you're still working on yourself. Same thing, you know. So, thank you for letting me say this to you today. It's just funny how some of the stuff in this course just trigger a whole level of stuff from the course. And, so I'm going to stop here. It's 1 o'clock, 1:03 actually. I was freaked out when I looked down at my watch. I need to be out of here by now. Thank you for sharing with me with my full-time ministry with the course. It's been great watching, doing what I felt like I came here to do, and watching people appreciate it and watch the universe provide. And when I want to support you in whatever it is you feel like your purpose is. So anything that you're trying to accomplish or anything that you want to have happen in your life, don't hesitate to share that with me so I can join with you on the idea of you achieving that. You know, I mean that. I mean, it makes all the course says two sons of God, two minds of God joining on one idea equally creates it. So join with somebody else on it and watch it happen. I'm also, these are two sheets that describe two kinds of personal sessions that I do with people. One called a clarity session, the other called the soul purpose reading. If you'd be interested in doing that and you want to find out more about it, this explains it, everything about it. So don't hesitate to take one of these with you. And I do three other classes. They're different, just like any chick. I am too, you know. So I love that. I appreciate y'all so much. I'm going to pass this basket. Oh, there it is. Thank you for sharing with me, Holy Spirit. I appreciate that. I like to kind of go within. And what I'd like to ask you to do with your eyes closed is just take this thought with you today. And that thought is, I no longer see any value in pain. I no longer see any value in having this problem. I no longer see any value in me suffering. I no longer see any value in me suffering. I am innocent. I am innocent. And if there's another person involved, tell yourself, even if I don't see it or feel it, they are innocent too. I don't have to see it or feel it. I'll just side with the idea that there's innocence in that person. And the last thought is, God's will for me is perfect happiness. God's will for me is perfect happiness, and I share God's will for me. I share God's will for me. So be it. I don't know if I told you.